Vasudevaya.
So we are reading from the fourth canto, chapter 23, text 27, correct?
Tesham Dharapam Kim Tu Anya Martyanam Bhagavat Padam Bhuvi Lokayuso Ye Vai Naishkamyam Sarayanti Uta Tesham Dharapam Kim Tanyam Madhyanam Bhagavat Padam Bhuvi Loka Yuso Yevai Nishkarmyam Sarayantuta Tesham Dharapam Kim Tanyam Madhyanam Bhagavat Param Bhuvi Lokayuso Yevai Naishkarmyam Sarayantita Tesham Dharapam Kim Tanyam Madhyanam Bhagavat Param Bhuvi Lokayuso Yevai Naishkarmyam Sarayantita.
Mistake in the book. Anyway, we'll carry on. Krishna will understand. I was in the room one time. We should chant properly, no doubt. But a man was a Sanskrit scholar, and he was trying to impress Srila Prabhupada. And he said, is it Krishna? Is it Krishna? Is it Krishna? Prabhupada said, don't worry. He knows who's calling. So we'll just do our best. Now, you want
to... Naishkarmya sadayantuta Tesham dharapam kim kanyam Martyanam bhagavat param Bhuvilo layuso yevai
Vaishnavis, we want to cover a lot of ground today, so we're going to be a little truncated in how we do this. Ladies, Vaishnavis.
Naishkamyam sadayantuta Tesham dharapam kim tanyam Martyanam bhagavat param Tesham,
of them,
Dharapam,
difficult to obtain,
Kim,
what,
to,
but,
Anyat,
anything else,
Martyanam,
of the human beings,
Bhagavat Padam,
the kingdom of God,
Bhuvi,
in the world,
Lola,
flickering,
Ayusa,
span of life,
yea,
those,
vai,
certainly,
naiskarmyam,
the path of liberation,
sarayanti,
exercise,
uta,
exactly.
Translation,
in this world, every human being has a short span of life. But those who are engaged in devotional service go back home, back to Godhead. For they are actually on the path of liberation. For such persons, there is nothing which is not available. Also, you say, in this material world,
every human being
has a short span of life.
But those who are engaged in devotional service
go back home, back to Godhead. For they are actually on
the path of liberation.
For such persons, there is nothing which is not available. Purport. In the Bhagavad Gita 9.3, the Lord says, Anityam Ashukam Lokam Imam Prapya Pachavamam. The Lord here declares that this material world is full of miseries. I brought the wrong glasses. Asukam. And at the same time, very flickering. Anityam. Therefore, one's only duty is to engage himself in devotional service. This is the best end to which the human life can be spent, can be put. Those devotees who are constantly engaged in the service of the Lord's lotus, of the service of the lotus feet of the Lord, achieve not only all material benefits, but also all spiritual benefits. For at the end of life, they go back home, back to Godhead. Their destination is described in the verse as Bhagavat Padam. The word Padam refers to abode, and Bhagavat means the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, the destination of the devotees is the abode of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. In this verse, the word Naishkarmyam, which means transcendental knowledge, is also significant. Unless one comes to the platform of transcendental knowledge and offers devotional service to the Lord, one is not perfect. Generally, the process of jnana, yoga, and karma are executed life after life before one gets the chance to render pure devotional service. This chance is given by the grace of a pure devotee. And it is in this way only that one can actually attain liberation. In the context of this narration, the wives of the demigods repeatedly repented because although they have the opportunity of a birth in a higher planetary system, a lifetime spanning millions of years and all material comforts, they were not as fortunate as Prithu Maharaj and his wife, who were actually surpassing them. In other words, Prithu Maharaj and his wife scorned promotion to the higher planetary systems and even to Brahma Loka because the position which they were obtaining was incomparable. In the Bhagavad Gita 18.8.16, the Lord affirms Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Purnara Vratino Ujjana. From the highest planet to the material world to the lowest, all are places of misery where repeated birth and death take place. That's the sign on the bottle before you drink it. In other words, even if one goes to the highest planet, Brahmaloka, he has to return to the miseries of birth and death. In the ninth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, the Lord asserts, when they have thus enjoyed heavenly sense pleasures, they return to this mortal planet again. Thus, after exhausting the results of pious activities, one has to come again to the lower planetary system and begin a new chapter of pious activities. It is therefore said in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Naishkarmyam Apyachuta Bhava Varachitam. The path of liberation is not at all secure unless one attains devotional service of the Lord. Even if one is promoted to the impersonal Brahman, he runs every chance of falling down into the material world. If it is possible to fall down from the Brahma Jyoti, which is beyond the highest planetary system in the material world, then what can be said of ordinary yogis and karmis who can only achieve and be elevated to the higher material planets? Thus, the wives of the denizens of the higher planetary systems did not very much appreciate the results of karma, jnana, and yoga. Before we start, I would like to apologize to the translators, wherever you are. I speak quickly. It's just, I'll do my best to slow down, but if I slow down, then my brain slows down and the whole thing jams up. So I'll do the best I can. Also, they said avoid American idioms. you know, a bird flies in the sky according to its ability. So they say you can take the man out of the country, but you can't take the country out of the man. So I will do my best. Also, I hope that somehow or other, in spite of my multiple shortcomings, I'll say something that gives you pleasure. Please, may that become true. I was thinking before we started the body of things, I appreciated so many wonderful classes, but I was just particularly thinking about Bhakti by Bob Maharaj, and he was talking about Srila Prabhupada's mood and his, you know, very succinct sutras that sometimes just knock the life airs right out of people, and they had nothing to say. So I wanted to mention, I have one particular incident that comes to my mind. Hey, anybody got a cell phone? You can shut it off. Bad news will still be there later on, don't worry. It was the late spring or early summer of 1970, and I was a bhakta, trying to become a bhakta, in our Los Angeles temple. And Prabhupada was invited to speak on a radio show. Fortuitous, huh? It actually means you. So Prabhupada was invited to speak on a radio show. Now the thing is, anyone who lived in California at the time, the man's name was Joe Pine. It was the Joe Pine Show. And he was famous for being sarcastic and just really going after his guests. That was his, the Ross was he tried to slap around his guests and they tried to, it's like a boxing match. So the devotees were thinking Prabhupada shouldn't go. Why should he subject himself to this, you know? But Prabhupada calculated, we'll say Krishna, Krishna, we'll just count how many times we say Krishna, and the people out there in the, you know, Southern California will at least hear Krishna. So Prabhupada went. And sure enough, the man was true to color. First thing he said, you're coming here to America, and you're coming from India. What can you possibly teach us? We already have religious institutions. We have our understanding of God. And you're coming from a place where the death rate is so high. What can you teach us? Prabhupada said, death rate is the same everywhere, 100%. So the man was, you know, a little taken by that. So he, you know, there was a little pause. Then he came back and he said, but according to your cosmology, you say the world is flat. Now they're actually talking, it's a long story, but you know, the plane of the cosmos, you know, all the planets and that, the solar system, that's actually relatively flat, and that's what the Vedas are talking about. But this man misunderstood. He meant the planet Earth. He said, you say the world is flat. Prabhupada said, everywhere I walk it is. At which point, you know. So he had a lady assistant. He had a lady assistant. And so she, you know, he was a little stunned, so she kind of came in as his partner. She said, well, why do you shave your head? He said, why do you shave your legs? Prabhupada said, he said, better a warm legs and a cool brain. So then the guy kind of recovered. He came back one last time. And he said, what would happen if everyone became Krishna conscious? Prabhupada said, don't worry. There'll always be fools like you who won't. And the man was just shut down. That was it, you know? And for the next 10 minutes, you know, Prabhupada just spoke. He owned the station. And when we got back, it was like listening to a prize fight, you know, on the radio. We were all crowded around the radio. And when Prabhupada got back, there was a little, you know, Prabhupada came and there was, you know, and Prabhupada said, he said, I can say this, but you cannot. He said, it is the special dispensation for old men and little children. They can go anywhere and say anything. Then another time, Prabhupada's deep, I mean, Prabhupada would chastise us internally, because it's the business of a spiritual master to train the disciples, not just to praise you, it's not a, you know. But Prabhupada would always come to the defense of the devotees. If someone criticized the devotee, he may chastise us later on, but he would always, you know, come to the front of the devotees. So it's sort of in that mood. Our temple commander, Keshava, anyone who knows Keshava? He's a former Hell's Angel. He used to make his living rolling drunks. I mean, he was a heavy guy. You think your temple president is a little oppressive that he asks you, please, Prabhu, could you come on time for Mangal Arti? You know, don't be a member of the fan club or the garden club or the Lions Club, you know, Lord Nrisimhadev, Tulsi Puja. Come on time for Mangal Arti. He was heavy. So Prabhupada's garden, if you've been to LA, Prabhupada's garden is there. The building is here. Now, where the gift shop is now used to be the Brahmacharya Ashram. And when Prabhupada would come in the late afternoons, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, and he would be speaking with very important people, top professors, or the councilman from the locals, big people, very wealthy, And all the brahmacharis, if we leaned out the windows upstairs, we could hear what Prabhupada was saying. And sometimes we would take turns. I'd hold the back of one devotee's dhoti, and he would lean out the window for 5 minutes, and we'd take turns, So imagine the scene. Garden is here, and all these brahmacharis and bhaktas hanging out the windows. I mean, it looked like a monkey gallery, a zoo. So Keshava said to us, he said, Prabhus, and understandably so, he said, this is embarrassing. It looks like a zoo up there, all hanging out. And, Prabhupada speaking to these respectable people, and Prabhupada is such a transcendental gentleman, and, it's an embarrassment to Prabhupada. So you can't do that anymore. So we were heartbroken. But we thought, he's saying it, it's true, and it does look silly. We don't want. So the next day, either a dying goat, I don't know what that is. So the next day, Prabhupada came, sat down in his garden, college professors, mayor of LA, I forget who was there. Prabhupada sat down, looked, saw the windows empty, turned to Keshava and said, where are the brahmacharis? He had Keshava go and get us, Because Prabhupada's first duty was to train his disciples. Just a little flavor of Prabhupada's mood. Let me ask you a question. If a building is on fire, what is on your mind? How to get out of the building? If a building is on fire, do you stop for a sandwich on the way? You want to get out of the building. So here it's describing, if somebody's walking, it says in the Bhagavatam, you don't pick up one foot until the other foot is secure. In this way, one moves. Or kids have swings, those ring sets, or bars. You don't let go of one bar until you're certain of having the other one. You follow me? One can give up something if one's confident of the other thing. So, again, a bird flies in the sky according to its ability. I thought I would speak a little bit. It talks about flickering and full of misery. And as someone who has experience of these things, I thought that I would focus a bit on that, because that will give us the conviction to come to devotional service. One has to give up this. So I was thinking, there are some stock and trade misconceptions that we carry within the mind. They're like ghosts that haunt us. We're always hearing a voice within the mind. Or the head of the Nazi propaganda, Goebbels, his statement was, if you tell a lie loud enough and long enough, people will believe it. You follow? Tell a lie loud enough and long enough, and eventually people will believe it. And he said, don't tell a little lie. If you tell a little lie, people think, oh, what's that? But if you tell a big lie, they'll think, well, they would never lie about that. So the material nature, in its throwing and covering potency, throws out several illusions that we believe, big lies. And I'm going to do my little best to try to poke a hole in those balloons. One of those, that the world would be great if we just figure out how. Everybody else is having a good time, or at least this guy's having a good time, and if I just push matter around and put it in the right place, I'm going to have a great time. I just have to manipulate this place in the right way, and I'll become happy. So that's one ghost rattling around in the brain. Another one is that that we're entitled to be titillated at every moment. That I should be happy. All my senses should be firing, my brain should be peaceful, my body, everything should be happy. I should be happy in this world, that I should just be smooth sailing. Why? Where is the definition? We'll get into that in a second. But that's our concept. That somehow or other, we're meant to... someone was saying one thing, and I'm embarrassed to say I can't remember who. Oh, Bhakti by Bhav Maharaj. Prabhupada, Ramaswar told me this, and Prabhupada told Ramaswar that Ramaswar asked Prabhupada that, you know, what is it with this? You know, where is Krishna's mercy that this, you know, everything's going smooth, you know, and then all of a sudden there's disturbances. Why does Krishna allow these disturbances? Where's Krishna's mercy? We're going smoothly and there's disturbances. Where, you know, why is that? And Prabhupada laughed. And Prabhupada said, actually the real situation is this world is in constant turmoil and chaos. And by Krishna's mercy, for a few minutes it goes smoothly. We're thinking default mode is that it should go smoothly, and why does it get disturbed? The reality is this world is completely full of chaos and distress. And by Krishna's grace alone, we get a few minutes of smooth sailing. So this idea that my senses should always be titillated and I should be happy and this is really the goal of life, why? Okay, another one of the ghosts that will be done is that we're making progress, that things are getting better. Hey, we conquered this disease, we conquered that disease, we've got broadband television, you know. Whoa, everything's getting better. Prabhupada said that your progress is like the moth into the flames. There's motion, but where is it going, you know? So progress, that we should be titillated at every moment, and if we just push matter around in the right way, we'll become happy. They say that a language is the verbal manifestation of the consciousness of a people. Language, verbal manifestation of the consciousness of the people of a people. For example, the Eskimos, I don't think we have any Eskimos here. That's one place we gotta get to. Although we have someone reading Prabhupada's books on the South Pole. Yeah. That's another story we'll tell some other time. But assuming there's no Eskimos here so they can't confirm, you'll have to take my word for it. There are something like 14 different words or 20 different words for snow in the Eskimo language. Because it's something they experience. It's part of their, it's a profound part of their constant experience, is snow. I'll give you another example. When the Jesuit missionaries went to Japan, it was really tough for them to translate the Bible and preach because there was no equivalent word for God in the Japanese language. They had impersonal Buddhism. They didn't have a concept of a personal God. So how in their language do you find the word to express? You follow? Dravida Prabhu was telling me that in the Sanskrit language, there's 24 different ways of saying lotus. He counted it once. Dravida's fantastic. If you ever get his association, I don't mean to embarrass him, but he's like a gulab jamun. You just touch it and so much of juice comes out, you know? Take advantage of his association if you get the chance. So we can understand Sanskrit language, Vedas, 24 different words for lotus. This is a homework assignment for you, Prabhus, Matajis, Maharajas. Get a thesaurus on your, you know, iPad or whatever, computer, and look under suffering. You will find so many different words that describe suffering. Pain, distress, misery, agony, anguish. Just start with the A's. There's an hour there, just sorting through the A's for the degrees. That means that that's our experience, all the different flavors of experience of suffering in this world. Shows you where I'm at. I was trying to wash my feet in the room I'm in, and there's a shower, you know? And so I didn't want the water to come from the top and spray all over me, because I was in my dhoti. I wanted to get to my feet, you know? Well, a simple thing, just turn the knob. Ooh! Turned it on. There's a sides thing, you know, a little handheld to completely soak me. You know, I'm going to go back to Godhead without a guru. I can't even wash my feet without help, you know, and clear instructions. So this world is a constant, I mean, there's huge disasters that happen to us, but it's a constant stream of petty embarrassments, this material world, from grandiose suffering to petty embarrassments. It is the nature of this place. Radhanath Maharaj was saying that somehow or other his father may have passed away, so some time ago, his father got cable television, satellite TV, with 107 channels. He said the problem is by the time you go to see what's going on the different channels, by the time you get to 60 or 70 or 80, when you speak of 100, you forgot what the early ones were. So you forget what you wanted to watch. You're an endless, like a hamster on a wheel, going round and around trying to find the station you want, you know? Searching, too many choices. And also because they have remote and so many different remote control. You don't have to get out of the chair. Fantastic. Now everybody dies from obesity because they don't get any exercise. They just sit in the chair or, you know, Facebook or alternative reality games. They get no exercise. They drop dead from that. Not to worry. There's a devotee, I won't mention his name. He has this raw food diet. I'm not criticizing. Whatever works for you, take it, Hare Krishna. But he practically gets mugged by the squirrels when he walks down the street because of all this raw food stuff, you know? He said, if you eat like this, Prabhu, you will live 7 years longer. I said, yeah, if I eat like that and live 7 years longer, I'll have to eat this for 7 more years. Better to die eating, you know? Better to stay for prasadam, you know? So, you can't win. It's a no-win game. Just look at it. We're not talking magical thinking yet. We're not talking that you have to have faith in, you know, transcendent reality that Krishna's blue and playing a flute. We haven't even gotten there yet. This is just no magical thinking, common sense, just dispassionate study of reality. That's all we're asking you to do now. Look at this body. If you ask a small child, where is Radhasundari and Ananda Tirtha's Abhay? What is it? Abhay Chhat, isn't it? What is it? Ah, oh, right, Rajmohan, sorry about that. Rajmohan. Okay, I don't want to embarrass him. But if you ask him, how old are you? You take any child, you ask him how, suppose the kid is 8 years old. He's not 8, but suppose the kid is 8 years old. And you say, how old are you? Wait, let me guess. And if you say a higher number, say 10, 12, how does the kid feel? Oh, he feels great. Swells his chest, steps up, big time. Ask someone who's in the older, Yamaraj has already sent his signals, glasses, cane, gray hair. Ask him how old you are. Suppose a man's 65 and you say, oh, I was thinking you were 60 or 50. How does he feel? It's almost as good as saying, oh, you've lost weight, you know. He feels very happy about things, you know. I have done a field study. I have studied the matter, older. Kids want to be older, till about 22, 23, 24. 24 is when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur took. It's said that the body is at its apex at 24. That's the best it's going to get, Prabhu. It's all downhill after that. And Prabhupada said Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur at 24 kicked on the face of Maya. He took sannyas, you know. So I've done a study. 22, 23, okay. And coming from the other side, they want to be younger, young. It's about 26, 20, let's be generous. 26 to 22. Let's say 27 to 22. What is that, 4 years? 5 years? That means out of an average lifespan of 5 years, of 75 years, there's only 5 years that you're actually happy with the state of your body. Think about it. I mean, 5 out of 75, what is that? You got a math guy here? Whatever the percentage is, you know? Let's take another one. Look at the mind. When I was a kid, I'm the youngest in my family. My brother went to school first. My sister went to school first. I wanted to go to school like anything. Hey, I went to school, was there for a few days. Okay, been there, done that. I'm going to go home. Oh, no. You're strapped on. What is this? You know, I didn't sign anything, you know? I thought, well, okay. I'll get out of elementary school. I'll be in middle school. You know, I can play sports. It'll be cool, right? You get into middle school. I broke my collarbone as soon as I was in there playing football. All right, well, at least, you know, it'll be better. There's high school. I can drive. There's girls. So many. Fantastic. I'll be in high school. How long did that? You're talking, you're going into high school. They love it. They into high school. Then they're going to go to college. Hey, I'll be away from my parents. Just send money. I can drive a car. Fantastic. You talk to freshmen, they love it. You talk to a senior in high school, I mean a senior in college, they just want to get out. I mean, unless those who are, you know, get a master's degree or permanent head damage with a PhD. So, but the rest, you know, you want to get out. And they say they want to get out into the real world. Okay? You talk to, in other words, they're looking forward, in the future. Prabhupada met the young executive at Dynapound. And that's another story. I mean, Prabhupada completely blew their mind. Set Tamal Krishnamurti up as the bad cop. He paid the good cop and got a fantastic price for printing the books. Just blew their mind. the, and translators are sorry, wherever you are, they've probably given up at this point. So the young executive, they were all out. The senior executives were trying to get their life affairs back together after Prabhupada had blown their mind at the price he was offering. They asked the young executive, what is your goal in life? Prabhupada asked him. Now everyone had put their business card on the table. Picture big meeting room, big table, everyone's business card. So the young exec didn't speak English very well. He collected all the business cards and he stacked them on top. Stack of cards. Then he very ceremoniously took his card out and put it on the top. That was his goal, to become the top executive, you know? And then towards the end, when they finally get to the top, what are they looking forward to? When they can retire. Isn't it? Sit on the porch, drink lemonade. And you talk to them, what are they talking about when they've retired? Oh, when I was in high school. Oh, when I was in college. Oh, when I was a young buck starting out in business. My point is, they spend their whole time looking forward or their whole time looking back. When were they happy? So when was the body in a happy state? When was the mind in a happy state? Let me give you another. I've mentioned this before, but I'm going to say it again. I got a new audience here. I was flying on BBT business, ISKCON business. I was flying from New York to Puerto Rico. Now, in the New York airport, there's a big sign, going nuts in this city. Cacophony of noise, chaos, turmoil. Go to Puerto Rico. And it showed a beautiful beach. Because we're inherently persons, there were two sets of footsteps, not one, two sets. Looks good, looks peaceful, tranquilo, let me go there. When I arrived in the airport in Puerto Rico, before I even got to customs, there was a big sign going nuts on this little island with nothing to do, go to New York. I'm like, huh? You know? I was in New York, they weren't happy. I'm in Puerto Rico, they're not happy. Was it, you know, it's 6,000, was it 3,000 feet? At 3,000 miles, 30,000, you know, was it over Atlanta somewhere? Because I flew right past it. I didn't find happiness. The little toe. Anyone here wake up this morning and feel great titillation from their little toe? Oh, little toe, please thrill me today. Anybody getting any juice out of the little toe right now? Maybe you got a mosquito bite and you itch it, but other than that, anything else happening? So its propensity, its potential for pleasure is practically nil. I was in a hurry. I was born 7 days early. My mother says I've been in a hurry ever since. And I came around the corner of the San Diego Temple and I caught my little toe. Snap. Anyone ever broken their little? It was perpendicular. Whack. Extremely painful. Yeah. Put it on the pan balance. Potential for pleasure, practically minimal. Potential for pain, unlimited. If it had gotten scratched and infected without penicillin or medical cure, you can die from a scratch on your little toe. So let's just step back and look at the situation for a moment. They have something in archaeology, it's called function from form. You figure out, you know, they're always digging around for pot shards, you know, so you put together the pot shards, you know, little chips of pot, and you figure, oh, it's a funerary vessel, and they must have had a belief in an afterlife. They create some concept, some impression of the people based on the from the form of the item, they figure out its function. Oh, this was for storing seed. They must have been agrarian society. You got the idea? From the form, they determine its function. Dispassionately study this body. It's not designed for eating. The elephants of Betus, the cows of Betus, you know, whatever. Anaconda can swallow any of you like a tasty pakora snack item. So it's not really designed for eating. We eat a little too much, too little, get indigestion. It's not designed for eating. We can go through all four, but I want to save time. It's not designed for mating. Rabbits have defeated us. I could tell you a rabbit joke some other time about that. The rabbits have completely defeated us. Hogs, they don't have to discriminate. So if you take defending, if there's anybody here got a black belt in karate? No black belts in karate in the house? There usually is one. Anyway, take somebody with a black, I'm usually very nice to them, I'm careful. If somebody has a black belt in karate, and on this side I have a Bengal tiger, and they're together in a cage, who are you going to bet on? I mean, there's one slap, and the guy's finished. So we're not designed for eating, we're not designed for sleeping. If you look at it, What is this body designed for? Man is called the rational animal. I think, therefore I am. Who are we? Kayami, Sanatana Goswami asks, who am I and why am I suffering? Atato Brahma Jigyasya. This is what the human form of life is designed for. It's not designed for this foolish, petty, pale, insufficient activities. There was a man, I don't want to mention it, was, it's the past tense, Tukaram, if he's here, can confirm. He had a little cough. Guy was 50 years old, super healthy, supposed to, you know, had the heart rate of a 35-year-old. Had a little cough. Went to the doctor because it wasn't going away. Turns out he had some kind of lung cancer. They said, you've got 6 weeks to live. Actually, turned out he didn't even have 6 weeks. He was gone in 10 days. John Riggs. They brought his ashes here, you know? A little cough. I don't mean to scare anybody, but... it's described that we're like a drop of water on a lotus leaf. That is our actual situation. Govinda Das says, at any minute. And we're so foolish. Speaking for myself. And where do we go in the next life? Prabhupada was describing, because it says about material benefits, and what's the time? Oh, jeez. Tamal Krishnamurti told me this personally, that when they were in the court case in Bombay trying to get the permit for constructing the Juhu temple, they had to go to court so many times. And when they were sitting on the benches in the courtroom were full of bench bugs. So the bench bugs were biting them, and they come home with big welts all over their legs and like that. So Tamal Krishnamurti mentioned this to Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, you should take legal briefs and sit on legal briefs. Prabhupada said, these bench bugs are lawyers in their past life who squeezed all the blood out of their clients, and they've come back as bench bugs. He said, because they're attached to the law, they've come back as bench bugs in the court, and they're still squeezing blood. But Prabhupada said, if you sit on the court briefs, they still respect the law. Actually, they can't burrow through the thick paper, you know. So, where do we go in our next life? I was listening to a tape, and this man is going on, and it's in India, and the same consciousness as ever, I'm not picking on India. But the man is saying, oh, my father did this, and my father did this, and by my father's mercy we have this house, and by my father's mercy I have the business he's got. And on one hand, we should respect our father, no doubt about it. But he's going on and probably trying to explain, what are you doing with your human form of life, and whatever, you know, like that. And the man is going on and on and on. Finally, Prabhupada said, where is your father now? Prabhupada said, he may be a cockroach in the commode. And there's a dead silence. So, of course, Prabhupada said, I can say these things, you cannot, you know? But what is our future life? What is our next destination? What is our condition in this life? And what is our next destination? So, and Prabhupada talks about the cow patty. You know, the two cow patties talking to it. Just, if we stop for a moment and think, the wonderful, colorful worldview that Srila Prabhupada has given us through his Bhaktivedanta, the purports, it just, om again, in a genuine sense, it just lights up the whole world. So you know what the one cow patty is burning in the fire. And the other cow patty is laughing. Ha, 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 ha. What does the burning cow patty say to the laughing cow patty? He says, you're next. And we should see that. We are next. Time and tide wait for no one. You want to do another sociological study? Talk to anyone who's 65, 70 years older and ask them about how fast time goes. The older you get, the faster time goes. My son was talking to my father. And he said, hey, Gramps, I got a new cell phone number, you know? Write it. You know, my father said, let me write it down. My son said, Gramps, just memorize it. My father said, oh, no, no. He said, at my age, something goes in, it pushes something out. My son said, yeah, that's true. I lost a whole year. My father said, you lost a year. I lost 10 years, a decade. I can't figure out what happened. The older you get, the faster time goes. So we have to be intelligent. Prahlad Maharaj says, now. Anyone know the definition of the Bhagavatam of what is old age? What is old age? Just before death. Anyone here have a certificate from Yamaraj? So there it is. Because I do want to get to something else. It says in the verse that we achieve all material benefits. By devotional service, one achieves all material benefits. Prabhupada was walking out here in the field. You can hear the tape. And Prabhupada says, this was the first year that we'd all come to Mayapur. 73? And it was tough. We were innocents abroad. We didn't know how to live in India. Everybody was sick. I mean, we were all laid low by Mahatma Gandhi weight loss program. I mean, we were in bad shape. So there are a few of us left standing, struggling out in these fields on Prabhupada's morning walk. And out of the blue, Prabhupada says, devotees don't suffer. There's a long pause. And finally, Pancha Devita says, Prabhupada. Then exactly what are devotees doing? What are the devotees doing if the devotees don't suffer? Because, you know, apparently, and you hear Prabhupada laugh, Prabhupada starts to laugh. And he says, that's all right. Back home, back to Godhead at the end of this life. Now, I have seen this, and we have all seen this. I remember Jayadwaita Maharsh, a wonderful wordsmith, saying that as Prabhupada was the acharya in life, he was also the acharya in death. And this is like a coconut, you know, a ripe coconut. There's the husk and there's the pulp inside that's rattling loose like that. For a devotee, actually Krishna conscious, he becomes free from all this fear of death. The Prabhupada was lying on his disappearance bed. He was not like Voltaire, who at the end of death called for a priest after claiming to be an atheist all of his life. Prabhupada, on his disappearance bed, Dr. Karana, Prabhupada had stayed at his house, life member, from Delhi. His son called him and said, can you just please go check on Prabhupada? So he called, you know, different specialists. They all got in a little caravan of, I think there were two types of cars in India, ambassadors. And you could get black or white. Those were the two types. I think you could get a fee on it. So they got in a little chain of ambassadors. They all came down to Vrindavan. They walked into Prabhupada's room. Now, Dr. Karan, I know him well. Now, he's passed away now, but he was a very sober man. He was not one to express emotion easily. And he saw Srila Prabhupada lying on his bed. He said that Prabhupada looked like Bhishma Dev. He said there was no fatty tissue. The skin was pushing the nerves right onto the bones. He said an ordinary man would have been writhing in pain. Prabhupada was asking for a little massage. When he came into Prabhupada's room, Prabhupada said, Dr. Karana, how are you? You've come such a long distance. You must be tired. Take some rest. Take some prasadam. Then come back and talk. Dr. Karana was stunned to the point of tears. He said, as a doctor, you know, he walks in and the patient is calling for morphine or for their mother, can you give me 7 more years? They're completely angst and anxiety. And here is someone who is in externally a very difficult, painful situation, completely transcendent, perfect gentleman, and simply asking about the welfare of others. How is it possible? And Prabhupada, when he was leaving Brooklyn Temple, came down in his elevator, was obviously already sick. Devotees were begging Srila Prabhupada, please, just go to Gita Nagari, rest for a month, we'll take care of everything, please. Prabhupada turned, he said, I want the benediction, like Arjuna, to fight until my last breath. I want the benediction like Arjuna, to fight until my last breath. And you see Prabhupada lying on his bed, literally to his last breath, speaking his purports, his Bhagavatam. Krishna gave him that benediction, to fight like Arjuna until his last breath. So, my simple point is that we should appreciate the assurances we have. I'll say it again. We should appreciate the assurances we have. The cowherd boys, when they met Agasura, they made an analytical study. Is it a cave? Are the teeth stalactites and stalagmites? They studied the whole thing. They concluded, very astutely, that from the fishy bad smell, it is definitely some kind of giant serpent ready to swallow us. What was their conclusion? Run for the hills? Krishna will protect us. Not that Prabhupada said devotees are fearless, but we're not fools, so we don't take advantage of this. But they were fearless, at play in the hand of God. We know that if something, Krishna will take care of things. And if it doesn't work out the way I want, this is a wonderful, sweet nature of the devotees. They use this word purification. Devotees are aspiring for purification. Some difficulty comes, some austerity, things don't work out the way. Ah, it's Krishna's mercy, he's purifying me. The karmis don't do, they curse, they swear. We had a devotee, and I am looking at the time. The Brahmachai Ashram in San Diego, the plumbing broke underneath, and for days the raw sewage flowed out underneath. Dravida will confirm, it was really nasty. We hired a plumber to climb under the house and tell us what it would cost. And this guy climbed under there. You can put this much raw sewage under the house. And we heard, words that would have embarrassed a sailor, a drunk sailor, came out of this guy. Things I've never, combinations of blue terms I've never heard in my life. He came out and told us the price would be $6,000. You know, we're not going to spend that kind of money. We had a devotee who was a plumber. So a devotee went under the house. Hare Krishna. A devotee went under the house. Same circumstance, but he was, oh, Krishna, Govinda, he chanted the whole Vishnu Sahasranam, under the house, But completely different. Same situation, totally different consciousness. There's a man dies and goes to heaven. Hold on, it's premature. A man dies, pearly gates, beautiful garden, celestial buildings, serene music, fragrant air wafting, this and that. He hears beautiful music coming from this one celestial building. He goes in there. Everyone's inside. It's mealtime. Everything you could possibly imagine, vegetarian, Krishna Prasad, is laid out there on the table. The only problem is everybody on the table has their hands chained and can't reach their mouth. He realizes, I'm in hell. Like Yudhisthira Maharaj going in. Then the next minute he wakes up, he's in another place, but it's the same layout. Beautiful gate, golden streets, beautiful buildings, garden, everything's like that. Music. He goes to the house, goes to the building, same thing, food. Everyone's also changed, but they're feeding each other. That's heaven. The only difference is the mentality. We should consider the great good fortune, the fearlessness we've got, that Krishna will protect us. Yokeshmam Bahamyaham. And if something doesn't work out according to our plan, that's Krishna's mercy. It's for our purification. At the end of this life, back home, back to Godhead. In summation, for us, as it says here in the purport, our problems are soul. Green mango, ripe mango, only time is separating. Our problems are soul. There is a law in America, it's called the Good Samaritan Law. If you see an accident, car accident, if you're a first responder, if you're a doctor or a paramedic or something like that, by law, if you see it and don't stop, you can be penalized. It's a first responder that if you see it, you have to stop if you have some ability to help. So even the karmis have that. What should be our condition for the suffering conditioned souls? We should not live a life. We should exercise these ghosts I've been talking about and focus on our real business. I remember seeing a figure that we only use a certain percentage of our brain. Again, one time a man said this chanting is brainwashing. Prabhupada said if the brain is dirty, shouldn't it be washed? Then the man said, well, I have a brain. Prabhupada said, if you have a brain, it's cow dung. I mean, what do you say after somebody says that to you? So even assuming they have a brain and it's not cow dung and they're using, there's a whole percentage of the brain they're not using. I used to think as a kid, well, what would we think if we could use our full brain? In a similar fashion, what will we think if our brain is not full of plans for our own selfish sense gratification? What will we think of? What we will think of is compassion for the suffering conditioned souls. I'm speaking to myself as well. We should not live lives of no consequence. Prabhupada talks about the bugs flying around the light, and in the morning you just sweep them all up and throw them in the dustbin. If I have a bucket of water, and I put my hand in a bucket of water, what happens to the water line in that bucket of water? It goes up. What happens when I pour my hand out? It goes to the exact same place. Should our presence in the world be like that? We take up space, and then when we're gone, everything's the same as it was, that we make no difference in this world? Is that the art to dog, the human form of life? Is that what it's meant for? And it is pale and pathetic. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, I am adventure. If we go out and preach, you know, read in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Haridas Thakur, Nityananda, Advaita Charya, all of the adventures they would have. Just two quick stories, one's the Prabhupada story and we'll be done. We'll be a few minutes over time. We used to go out in Detroit. We had a map of the city of Detroit. And the idea was to knock on every door in the city of Detroit. And they've been working on it for like 6-7 years. We had a map. We were actually working our way through it. And you know, anyone who's been to Detroit, the joke is it's a good place to be from. You'll get it after a while. It's a rough city, you know, and it has a poverty street. It has crime. It has areas that the police don't even go to at night. After 8 o'clock, they won't even go in. You call, they'll come 7 o'clock the next morning and see if the house is still standing, you know. We were going door to door. And we found out that this certain group of people, they didn't like sweets. We were shooting peanut butter burpee, so we made popcorn, just simple popcorn in bags. And we've been going for years through this area, this portion of town, distributing popcorn. Okay, we're there, we're chanting one day. I think it's 76. The Detroit riots were just about to break. This is when they burned down the whole city. It's a whole thing, right? It broke out right where we were. We looked this way, and there was Detroit's finest, the police, coming this way with tear gas masks, tear gas guns, shields, riot protection. And they were, you know, moving like a Roman legion. Boom, boom, boom. Coming down the street right to us. Okay, can't go that way. We look this way, coming down the other end of the street were the locals. Broken beer bottles, baseball bats, you know, and they were coming this way. And we were like a sandwich right in the middle of this thing. Well, we quick analysis, we thought, well, we got better luck with these. These guys have guns. These guys don't have guns. We'll go this way. And they were angry. And when we got just up close so they could see us, all of a sudden somebody yelled, "It's the popcorn people." They parted the crowd and we danced right through, you know. We had a, on the other end of the scale, there was a devotee, Dial Natai. He's from Los Angeles, really nice devotee. Many years ago, he was in LA. I think it was a long story. He was very shy, very introverted. I was telling him, "Oh, you got to go out on Sankirtan. It's so much fun and it's our duty and you've received mercy. It's your duty to give. Otherwise, you're a miser." You know, I tried every different angle, you know. He was a very shy guy. We were going in those days, we had a kirtan party going down the street, and then we were going door to door, you know, knocking on the other side of the street. So I convinced him to go out. First day out, first door he knocks on, I was there with him just to bolster his, you know, we knock on this door. We hear all the, you know, all the different locks and things sliding like that, and then door opens, and it's a little old lady. I told him, put the book in their hand, because then they develop a sense of ownership. You know, first thing you do is put the book. So she doesn't say a word, he doesn't say a word, he puts the book in her hand. It's a Sri Yasho Upanishad, you know, with beautiful Lord Vishnu on the cover. She looked at the book, little old lady, looked at him, looked at the book, looked at him, and fell over dead. I'm sure he was like, okay. We had to get the neighbors, we had to, the police came, I mean, she was gone, you know. He said to me, "Is it like this every day?" No, never happened before. But when you think about it, you know, think about it. I told him, and it's the truth. I said, that little old lady was just waiting for you. She had a whole life of suffering. She left her body looking at Vishnu. Looking at a Vaishnava, looking at Vishnu. I said, "Hi, let me line up. I want to go that way too, you know." So the Prabhupada said he asked for the benediction to fight like Arjuna till his last breath. Prabhupada was walking here in Calcutta. And Prabhupada said, they were going past the Victoria Memorial. I looked it up online. The Victoria Memorial, you know, the big memorial. It's, The Victoria Memorial is 200 feet high. Do we have an architect? Where's Govinda? How many stories is 200 feet? But you know, let's be conservative. Let's say 20 stories high. People are saying other things. And you know, India and other places in the world, bamboo scaffoldings, those things sway in the wind, you know, they're lashed together. So picture bamboo scaffolding 20 stories high. Prabhupada said as a young boy, Prabhupada was saying, I climbed to the top during construction. So you can imagine, you know, young boy all the way to the top. The devotee said, Prabhupada, you must have been very brave. Prabhupada said, I'm still brave. Otherwise, how have I come to your country all alone? So this is the mood of our acharya. One devotee said, Prabhupada, I feel so sorry for these people sometimes. Prabhupada said, why just sometimes? You follow? The devotee's heart, nectar devotion is like nectar. It's always flowing. So our problems are solved. Trying to enjoy in this material world is petty, pale, and pathetic. We have the answer. We have our assurances. We've seen it with our own eyes. We've seen so many devotees transcend very difficult positions. What to speak of our founder, Acharya? We have the alternative of a blissful, adventurous life of Sankirtan. Serve the mission. Distribute books. Worship the deities. Put your shoulder to the wheel and push the mission forward. And all things will come. And at the end, back home, back to God. Thank you very much. And now, another austerity is laid upon us. We either chant and see the deities or take prasadam. It is such a rough life.
This goes Raju Narayan Prabhu ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai.